So, Brian, this week I was listening to, well, actually I was watching an old episode of Saturday Night Live.
You were?
Are you familiar with the show?
Yeah, yeah. enough. Enough. I haven't watched like every episode.
It's like, you know, it's a long running sketch show on NBC.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's on like TBS or something like that.
Yeah, no, NBC.
Oh, NBC.
Yeah,
oh,
late night, though. Late night. Okay. Also in syndication on many stations.
Is it on like Tuesdays or something like that?
Well, it's called Saturday Night Live, Brian, so.
Okay, I thought that was a gimmick.
Yeah, no. So I was watching an old episode of SNL, and there was a Wayne's World sketch on, which is like classic.
Yeah, classic.
And he referred to someone as like the prince, the like queen of Babylon. And I was like, that is what I need to call everyone who listens to this podcast. Babylonians.
Babylonians.
Yes. So I'm lifting the joke.
Okay.
From someone by the name of Mike Myers is his name.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Myers, not to be confused with the killer.
Not the killer.
Fictional killer.
Or the one living over in Chicago.
Yeah. No, the comic. Former. Yeah. Yeah, the former Columbus comic. No. Yeah. So.
No, that's good. That's a good one.
Babylonians.
I still like Babes Out in Babeland, but Babylonians is like a lot faster to say.
Yeah, so. Babes Out in Babeland. That won't go away.
All right.
And I
think it's good to have multiple names.
Yeah, I think so too.
Like your audience members can choose which one they are.
Yeah.
Maybe they feel like Babylonians, you know?
Yeah.
Like I fucking kick ass all the time.
Right. It's an identity thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like,
choose your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Choose your own thing.
That's right. Be who you are. Mm-hmm. Do you.
I should come up with one for you. I don't have one right now, but that's I'll let you know.
Yeah. You know, maybe it's just a growing process.
It is.
It's a process.
Yeah.
So this week we had Rachel Wiley on the show. She is a badass poet, performer, fat activist, general person who I want to be like in life.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to have her on the show because I think that she is really talented and she's doing a lot of great things. And I really wanted to know more about her life. So, you know, a lot of people know who she is because she's like gone viral and she, you know, does a lot of like personal work in her poetry. But I wanted to dig a little deeper.
And boy, did you
and
dig.
And boy, did we dig. We went all the way back to when she was in the NICU. Born 2 months early. So it was pretty cool. You can find Rachel actually online. She has a website. It's wileypoetry.weebly.com.
That's cool.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you can also find her hosting the Columbus Queer Open Mic, which is typically every third Thursday at Wild Goose Creative. And she also hosts Writing Wrongs, but she said she sometimes doesn't go to that one. So maybe don't go to that one.
Was there a show at Ruby Tuesday too? Or is that
Ruby Tuesday. That's the Writing Wrongs show.
Oh, okay. See, I got the Tuesday confused with the Thursday.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
The Columbus Queer Open Mic, though, this month, she said, is on the 29th, which is a Saturday.
That's right.
So that's a Halloween show. So go dressed up in all of your Halloween costumes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll
look
be fun.
Fabulous and everything.
Yeah.
And scary at the same time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we publish this podcast before.
Wait. I mean, we'll work it in.
We'll
squeeze it in.
Yeah.
I feel like this one deserves that.
Yeah, we're working on a monthly format, Babylonians.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to play with it and figure out what it wants to be. But before we get started with the show, I actually wanted to give Brian an opportunity to pitch the things that he's been working on because he's been working really hard and has some like really exciting stuff coming up. So, Brian.
Oh, wow. I wish he'd given me that heads up before we started. No, I appreciate that. So, hi, guys. Hi, Babylonians or Babes Out in Babeland.
All the babes.
I'm wearing my babe shirt for this.
Ooh, you are. Is that Pam Grier?
I think so.
Yeah,
ooh, yeah.
She's a babe.
It's a Luke Capasso original t-shirt, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
He's a really great comic out in Dayton. I'm wasting my time plugging his shit. No, guys, I'm about to be releasing my stand-up CD. That'll be coming out on November 2nd.
What's it called?
It's called My Mom's Dead. And it's a comedy album.
I'm sorry.
No, it's great. I'm glad it's getting this reaction. It would have been a lot harder if you were just silent and like started to cry. So that's coming out. And then the tour itself will start on November 9th. And we will be doing a big finale show in Columbus on December 5th at the Garden Theater. The only other thing I want to tell you guys is if you have been fed up with all this political shit this whole election year, if you've been fucking fed up with this shit, I have a show coming up for you guys at Shadowbox where we are going to be doing live election coverage on November 8th. So election night at Shadowbox, you can come and drink, watch the show. It's pretty much like a more fun CNN newsroom. So if you were going to watch that anyway, you should come to this because it's going to be way more fun. People are going to get drunk and we're probably either celebrating like, you know, how democracy works, or we're celebrating the end of the world.
And so, you don't have to see that fuggo Wolf Blitzer, am I right?
Right, exactly. Pat and Griffin are way cuter than Wolf Blitzer. Also, right. They have weird sexual tension, so that's good too.
Ooh. Now I'm intrigued.
Yeah, see? So come on out to that, guys. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much, Christine.
Yeah, Brian also has a great podcast called What's the Deal with Creativity? And I listened to two episodes today at work. So that's where my head's at. But the most recent one was really great. And Brian, do you want to talk about that for a minute too?
Yeah, sure. I just did an interview with Tara DeFrancesco and Rance Rizzuto. I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce his last name. It looks like
Rizzuto. Yeah, that's like Rizzuto. Adam Sandler.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like some weird pasta dish.
Yeah.
But no, I interviewed them because they're opening up an improv theater here in Columbus called The Nest. I will be taking improv classes there like a lot of other up-and-coming improvisers or performers. But before I did that, I wanted to get to know them, get to know their teaching and improv style, what do they believe in comedy and craft. And I think I did a pretty good job at figuring that out. And hopefully if you're interested in that or it sounds interesting to you, check out the episode on my website, BrianNoni.com, or just look up What's the Deal with Creativity on your podcasting app on your phone or Stitcher or something like that, and you'll find it. It was good. I was surprised how well it went. I was sick, and there was like I was doing a phone interview too, which I never done before, so that was fun.
It was great. It was really great.
Thank you.
Yeah, do recommend.
Yeah, but this episode is really great, and we're going to get to it at some point.
This episode is amazing. Yeah, I feel like we kind of did this backwards. We're still figuring it out, you guys. And I am okay telling you that.
No, this interview with, I watched this interview with Rachel live, and I was in it a little bit. And Rachel's one of the most amazing guests that Christine could have had this early on in the game. It was so much fun watching them talk, and you guys will enjoy it too.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get down to it, Babylonians. Rachel Wiley, for your listening pleasure. Good to see you.
It's good to be here.
Thanks for coming to my home.
Absolutely.
So the idea of this podcast is that you are here in my home and we get to hang out for a little bit.
Cool.
And I get to hear a little bit about your story. So I guess, I don't know. Why don't we just establish who you are and what you do? So Rachel Wiley, you're a poet. Mm-hmm. You are a fat activist. Mm-hmm. And we were on a show together not too long ago.
Right.
For Queer Behavior.
This is true.
It was about bodies, queer bodies.
Yes.
So I guess one thing that I think is important to note up front is that I knew who you were before I met you because you're like internet famous.
Florida.
And I was like, that girl's from Columbus and I have to meet her. And it was really exciting. So I'm happy that you're in my home now.
Yay.
Yay. So why don't we, okay, so now that we know who you are and what you do, let's go back. Let's go back to the beginning.
Okay. And
let's hear your origin story. As if you are.
I was born 2.5 months early.
Yeah. Oh, were you a preemie?
I was a preemie.
You were? Actually, were, yeah. Were you in the NICU?
I was.
Oh my
gosh. I was like 2 pounds.
No way.
Tiny baby. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Were your parents like terrified? What?
I don't think so.
No,
I mean, I hope my mom doesn't listen, but I think she was high.
Oh, geez.
My dad was definitely high. So they were kind of like, well, the baby's here.
Okay. Okay.
This baby's here now.
Okay.
She's not a patient one.
Okay.
Now we know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, my wife works in the NICU, so wow. I have a little knowledge about what goes on there. But good. Okay. So you came into the world early. You were ready to go.
Ready.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about like your childhood, about elementary school and like what kind of a kid you were, like, you know, straight out
oh,
the
wow.
top.
Yeah, we are doing.
Like, yeah, we're going way deep. Back.
I actually grew up not far from here. I grew up over near Children's Hospital.
Okay.
So that area, that yeah. park next to the hospital was...
casual
where
dog
I played
barking.
All Sorry. The time. That dog is about their duty. I appreciate that dog. That dog is like, I have a job. Yeah. There are no days off.
She has no free time.
Dog is busy. But yeah, I grew up over there. I went to elementary school near here too, over at Fair Avenue Elementary School.
Oh, wow.
I was a really quiet little kid,
yeah.
actually, which people are often surprised to hear. I was very shy, like painfully so, but then I would always end up in like weird activities for a shy kid, like cheerleading.
Yeah.
but I was in it for like the skirt and the pom-pom.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I was like, these things are nifty.
Femme as fuck.
Always. I've always been like the feminist.
Yeah.
Like, there are pictures of me at the zoo with like gloves and hats, like lady gloves and hats, not like winter gloves yeah. and hats, but like, I look like a tiny Jackie O.
Right.
Going to go like, but like then I would have on like the gnarliest tennis shoes because like I'm still gonna like climb a tree,
right?
Because I had an older brother and he was yeah. gonna climb a tree, and
yeah.
I was not gonna get left behind.
Amen.
I was just gonna hope not to like snag my plastic pearls
right.
on a
right.
branch,
not to rip your silk gloves,
right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I did. You know, I tried various things. My mom was really like, really big on like us being creative. Like, she put a lot of emphasis on that.
Yeah.
So we were just, like, you know, always painting, always something. We were always in lessons for something.
Oh.
And then quitting them.
Oh, yes. Yes. Preach.
I would be like, I'm going to be, like, a, you know, a famous piano player. And then a week later, I'd be like, this is hard. I don't want to do this. And I'd be like, tap dancing. And then I would be like, no, I just like how the shoes sound. I don't actually want to do this. We did theater. My brother and I did all sorts of things. So I don't think it was ever a question that I was going to end up doing something in the arts.
Yeah.
As a big part of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So were you and your brother like very close when you were growing up? Or?
When we were little, yes.
How far are you apart?
We're only a year apart.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, we're like stair steps.
Yeah.
But we're very like, we're like night and day different. Like he's like one of those like scary smart people, like doesn't have to study.
Yeah.
Like, is just like genius,
genius
and
yeah.
you're like,
perfect.
Nobody likes you. And like, meanwhile, like I like, but he wasn't very good socially, and I am the opposite. Like, I'm not dumb, but I'm not a genius.
Yeah.
But like, I have like some social skills
right.
that he does not have. And then I don't know. I don't know when it started. Probably around when we were like 12 and 13. We just started hating each other.
Oh, no.
It got dark real quick.
Oh, jeez.
He got violent. And so, yeah, like, that was not a good scene.
Yeah.
There's some trauma wrapped up in that.
Yeah.
He lives in Florida now and we don't speak. Okay. So, like, I think about having a brother sometimes and I'm like, yeah, oh, yeah. Or people will be like, do you have siblings? And I have to remember, like, oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do. I have a brother.
Yeah.
We liked each other when we were little.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like you had some, like, hijinks when you were, like, little kids.
Oh, together. Yeah. We were, like, inseparable when we were little.
Yeah.
But, you know. Weird things happen when you age, I guess.
Time and
he became life. A very angry person.
Jeez.
That happens, yeah. I guess.
When was the last time you saw him?
Oh, God. He moved to Florida when I was 18, I want to say. And that's probably the last time I saw him was, like, right before he moved to Florida.
Okay.
So, like, maybe... I don't know, a couple of days before he moved to Florida.
Yeah.
Like, I was the kid who was, like, always at their friend's house. Like I was, like, an instant, like, just, I was just, like, inserted into other families. People would be like, oh, yeah, Rachel's here, whatever. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, other people's moms adored me.
Yeah.
You know, my friends would be like, you're a suck up.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, I'm going to do the dishes for your mom. Oh. But I was, like, trying to earn my keep.
Yeah.
So, it's because I just never went home.
So you had, like, surrogate siblings.
I had surrogate families all over the west side of Columbus.
Yeah.
Where I went to high school. So, okay. I didn't even know what day my brother moved because I was not at interested. That house. So I was like, I'm just not going to be around for that.
Okay. So is there like a family like unit for you right now? Like is your family like a unit or are you kind of like disparate and?
Actually my mom and my stepdad live really nearby too. They still live in our old neighborhood on Champion Avenue. And like, yeah, I see my mom all the time now. Like it took us some years and some rough conversations, but we have a really great relationship now.
Yeah.
So yeah, she comes over, she brings her dog to see me sometimes. Oh. She has this deaf Australian shepherd named Madeline. Who she's like obsessed with. Like she used to say like we're coming over and that meant like her and my stepdad were coming over.
Yeah.
But like now it means her and the dog.
Yeah.
And the dog is always in the front seat of the car, like buckled in like a passenger, like people. And I'm like, I haven't seen my stepdad in like 3 months. I'm like, yeah,
Madeline
alive?
Is around but, like, every other week.
Is all over the place. But I haven't seen my stepdad in a while. So I should probably make a big effort to go see him.
Yeah, or perhaps bring my stepdad instead of your dog.
You know, like I like the dog a lot, but like I also really love my stepdad.
Right.
I mean, because they've been together since I was like 3.
Yeah.
And he was a really great stepdad.
Oh, so. That's nice.
Yeah. And then like my real father lives in Montana. He's an RI dude.
Yeah.
We talk on Facebook sometimes.
Oh, that's good.
We didn't start speaking until I was probably 22 or something. But
oh, really?
Yeah. He let me come to him. Like, he was like, well, if you want to, like, here's where I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you feel like at peace with everything, with your family and...
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
So are you... So do you have, like, a surrogate family now that you've sort of created for yourself, like, in the community?
I mean, kind of. I live above... One of my best friends, his name is Randall, and his partner, Chris, they found me my apartment, and it's above theirs, funnily enough. And so we do holidays together and things.
Yeah.
Like, we did Thanksgiving. We're going to do Thanksgiving again this year, too. Because I love holidays, but I don't have that, like, my family is not tight or traditional.
Right.
But I love all those things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I tend to build them with my friends. Mm-hmm. Like, Face is from Nevada, mm-hmm. so they don't always get to go home.
Yeah.
So they'll come around for various things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've sort of always done that, just sort of adapted friend groups into family.
Yeah. So you were talking about how you were always at other people's houses when you were a kid.
Yeah.
How did that? There's Lula, the killer. this is just real time, you guys. We are just living
a
real life.
Just making sure we're safe.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lula. You're appreciated.
So you were always like bouncing around to different households. So how did you sort of? how did that affect you as like a high school kid? Like, were you, did it more so ground you, or like, you know, did it affect you at all? Or
I was a pretty like level-headed high schooler. I mean, like, I did, you know, I did the bad things. Yeah. I did the drinking and the smoking. But I was like, I was responsible about it. Like, I had friends whose parents knew we were going to go out drinking, and they would say things like, well, you can go if Rachel's going.
Oh, okay. So you really were the suck up.
I was. Like, I would, I mean, I would make sure people are drinking water. I would carry condoms in my bag. Oh my gosh. I was just like, listen.
So responsible.
We're
going to
do this correctly, you guys.
Yeah. You were like the big sister.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Like, I just, yeah, I was really protective of everybody.
Yeah.
And so I was like, not on my watch.
Yeah.
Person.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, because I was in theater, and so I was always, you know, at school anyway. And so then, you know, parties or whatever would happen after that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just sort of was a transient person. Yeah,
okay.
Sleeping on couches, carrying yeah. backpacks,
yeah.
wearing character makeup, whatever.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I remember like having like the lines on my face, and my friends and I would always be like, do we look actually old or just like assholes with lines right. on our face? Like, we don't look like old women. So you were doing, so you did theater. What else were you involved in?
Mostly just that.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, I was a Band-Aid.
Oh, yeah. What did you play?
No, I wasn't in the band.
Oh.
I was a Band-Aid.
Oh, that like, means you were a groupie.
You're right. Like, I made sure the marching band kids had, like, their gloves and hot chocolate. And when it rained, I made sure I rolled out the seat covers because there weren't enough band parents.
Oh my gosh.
And a lot of my friends were in band.
Oh,
and
wow.
This was a way for me to get to go and like do
be with your
be
friends.
With them, like yeah. if they did away games, I got to jump on the bus and go with them.
Oh my
without
gosh.
Having to know how to read music or march,
right?
Or but I would just be like, is everybody hydrated?
Yeah.
Is everybody good? Do you have your gloves?
Wow, you are like a natural like nurturer. What is that? What is that?
Do you I don't think? Know because I don't want children.
You
like,
don't.
I have no desire okay. for children. I just I like to take care of like grown people. Like I yeah. like to take care of people that don't need me to take care of them necessarily. So that it's like optional. So I'm like, look, I'm gonna offer this thing, but if you don't need it, I'm gonna
it's
go.
It's cool, yeah.
That's fine.
Does it bring you joy? Like, what is it about yeah. it that you like?
It just sort of makes me feel, like, necessary in a way. Or, like, I don't know. Or it's sort of that, like, the way I would like people to treat me is sort of
yeah.
the same way I'd like to treat other people.
Yeah.
As basic as that is.
Okay.
I want somebody to make sure I have my gloves and I'm staying
yeah.
hydrated.
Like, that would be nice. Do you have people who you find do that for you?
Yeah, on some levels, yeah. I mean, no one, like, as close as I'd probably like.
Yeah.
But I have, like, good friends all over the country.
Who, yeah.
You know, text to check up on me.
Or right.
send me little presents.
So. Yeah.
And, like, poetry's been really good for that.
Yeah.
In terms of just, I have this vast community.
Yeah.
Sort of spread out everywhere.
Across the country.
Yeah, it's really great.
Okay. Okay, so you were a Band-Aid in high school. I can't tell if that's like nerdier than actually being in the band.
I think it might be.
I don't
honestly.
Know. I mean, I played the I played the clarinet in marching band, which is like the height of like nerdiness.
I was completely in love with the boy that played the clarinet. Madly in love with him.
Yeah. So, yeah, it wasn't, like, a thrilling experience, but it was fun. It was, like, fun to be around my friends and, like, whatever. It, you know, our band was, like, kind of cool in high school.
I mean, yeah, I went to West High School over on the west side of Columbus. And it wasn't like, I don't know, like you see like high schools on TV and it's like jocks and like the band is all geeks. And like that wasn't really what was going on at my
yeah.
high school.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Everybody just sort of had their cliques and
yeah.
did their thing. Like
yeah.
nobody was like, we're so much cooler than you.
Right.
Like, nobody cared.
Right. Yeah, there were like football players and like cheerleaders in the band.
Right.
Like, they didn't
exactly.
care.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's probably just like a big like misconception or something.
I was like, no, it's not like that.
My gosh. Okay, so So you got through high school being sort of a nerd.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I was a Band-Aid. I was a theater kid.
Were you gung-ho about school?
No. No. I was great, like, my first 2 years. I was really, like, but sort of the pressures of, like, at that time in my life, I was trying to sort of keep up with my brother. And it was impossible.
Yeah.
So I eventually sort of collapsed under the pressure, like one does.
Yeah.
And sort of was just like, you know what? Like, I could, like, cry myself to sleep, you know, trying to get, like, A's and B's.
Yeah.
Or I could, like, chill out, enjoy shit, and get, like, C's.
Right.
And that's what I did.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to enjoy my life and get C's.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. My brother was really smart, too. He's, like, a fucking architect now. So he's, like, all about, like, science and math. And I was, like, a theater kid. I was on the speech team. Nice. I was really good at, like, English.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else was so hard. It was right. just, and he was, like, breezing through everything. Oh, yeah. I'm like, oh, you're Zach's sister? Like, oh. You know, yeah. All the teachers, like, loved me. But I was like, I'm not going to hold up to any of your expectations.
My mom refused to send my brother and I to the same schools.
Really?
Because she didn't want that to happen.
No way.
She's like, no. Like, you're going to develop your own personalities, your own sets of expectations.
Wow.
Yeah. So I got to thank her for that.
Yeah.
Because I never, if I had to have come up behind him in school,
yeah.
like, it would have been all terrible.
Wow. That is an interesting thing. I've never heard that.
No, she did that all through school. We didn't go to elementary school together. None of it.
Oh, wow.
We were only a year apart.
I wonder if it would have been different if you were, like, further apart or
maybe
not.
I don't know.
She just, like, my brother and I were, like, 3 years apart.
I think she didn't have a great experience with, like, because she's got a younger brother and he came up in school behind her.
Yeah.
And I think there was something that left a bad taste in her mouth about that.
Okay.
About, like, because she's ridiculously smart, too.
Yeah.
My uncle, a little less smart in other ways.
God gave him other gifts.
He's a real good fisherman.
Yeah.
So my mom felt like she was always hearing about him.
Yeah.
You know. Or feeling responsible for him.
Right.
And she's like, I didn't want that. Like, right. I just wanted my social life.
My life, yeah.
And so that's why it was really important for her to keep my brother and I in separate schools.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Strong choice.
Yeah.
So you made it. You weren't thrilled about school.
I wasn't thrilled about school work. But you made it through. I loved high school, though. And I used to joke that I graduated on personality. Because, like, I would just schmooze my teachers.
They loved you.
They loved me. Yeah. Like, I had a history teacher once who was just like, listen, like, I tried to curve your grade, but, like, there's nothing.
There's simply nothing
I can like, do. He's like, if you just turn in something, like, I'll be able to work with that. I was like,
cool.
All right. I'll do something.
Oh my god!
And so I just, I would like, I don't know, I was sort of unchecked. Like, I just roamed the hallways and schmoozed. And
you didn't go to class?
I occasionally, like, or I would start out going to class, and then I would be like, hey, I have to go do this thing, and then leave. Or I would get kicked out of class for being
disobedient.
Usually for talking back.
Oh no. You were sassy.
I was sassy. And then I would just go to the theater classroom. Or my teacher there, she was just like this chill hippie.
Oh, you were like one of those kids that I totally envied in school who were like that. Who were like socially like competent enough to schmooze an adult.
Yes.
You know, I'd be like, oh, I don't know, I'm just putting some books in my locker. Like, I just had no idea how to talk to anyone.
I mean,
let alone my teachers.
Yeah, I would skip study hall and go to breakfast with my theater teacher.
Oh,
she'd be like,
gosh.
Do you want to eat? And I'd be like, yeah, let's go get pancakes. And so we'd go get pancakes.
Oh my gosh.
And if I got kicked out of class, I would just be like, hey, Smitty, can I come hang out? And she'd be like, of course.
Oh, wow. What a life. Oh, what a hard life, right. Rachel.
No, I know. And like, and yeah, that's how I got through high school. Like, I loved high school. I had a great group of friends.
Yeah.
And I was just sort of schmoozing my way around. Like, I wish I still had, like, that amount of, like, social prowess. Yeah. Like, I feel so awkward as an adult.
Yeah.
But no, as, like, a high schooler, too. I was just like, man, whatever.
That high school confidence.
Man, and, like.
That classic high school confidence.
And, like, the thing is, like, I don't know where it came from entirely. Like, I didn't love my body then yet. I just wore, like big and tall men's clothes and like tried to hide myself very much. So I don't know where I was getting that confidence.
Yeah.
But I was enjoying myself.
Yeah. So whatever. Don't question it. Just right. Don't I'm question just like, it. Well,
whatever. However that happened.
My God. I know. I remember thinking like so. I remember feeling so uncomfortable about my body like every single fucking day of the week in high school.
Every second.
And now I'm just like, man, I wish I just would have enjoyed myself and like not been so mean and hard on myself.
Yeah, I think that's probably my only regret is that, like, I wish I'd known.
Yeah. That it didn't fucking matter. That it didn't matter. You were, like, sexy. And
that I was fly as fuck. Yeah. Like, I look at high school pictures and I was like, man.
Yeah.
I was killing it.
Yeah.
Except for my eyebrows. Like, that was.
That was not a good.
I looked surprised constantly. Like, somebody should have been like Rachel. I mean, it was the 90s, so everybody had sort of, like, those thin, awful eyebrows.
Yeah.
Mine just sort of looked like they were sliding off my face.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was not good.
Yeah. Mine were quite bushy, I would say. I would use that term. I was just talking to my cousin about it. She, like, tried to pluck them one day. We were, like, I don't know, just, like, fucking around. And she was like, you have a problem on your face. And I told her about it. She was like, oh, I don't remember that. And I was like, I do.
Right. I've
like,
never
it
forgotten.
Was pretty traumatic, Shauna. Okay.
Well, something similar. In middle school, a girl like leaned across the table before I learned about eyebrow maintenance.
Yeah.
And she goes, your eyebrows almost touch. And I was like, what? And I like went home and like obsessed over my eyebrows. And I spent the next few years obsessing them right off my face.
Right, right.
So I kind of blame her for my years of terrible
like bullying me into 10 years of bad eyebrows.
Because she was one of the girls that was like, you know, she was like glossy. Like she had like makeup and like.
Yeah.
And I was just sort of.
She like wore foundation.
She did. And I was like, what? Yeah. We're allowed to do that? Oh, there are dogs. Dogs.
They just want their own
podcast. Right.
We're out of control.
The dog cast.
The dog cast. The dog
right now. Someone's coming in the house. You guys are really good at your job.
Can I let them out?
Yeah.
Can we not, you guys? Come on.
If we ever get ads, we'll put it in here.
I do that for a living now. I think if we build up an audience, I think I have confidence that we can do it. Yeah, no, I had terrible eyebrows in high school as well.
I mean, I think you came up in the 90s. That was just,
yeah,
it was going to be what it was.
I had bad eyebrows until like 6 months ago, though.
Oh, word?
Yeah. I was in an Ulta store, and I was like, okay, here's the thing. I don't understand my eyebrows. And the girl was like, you just need to find your arch. And I was like, still don't know.
Yeah, like, what are you saying?
What? Yeah.
No, I actually learned about my own arch like 2 years ago. Because I was looking at my friend who like, what's the word? An esthetician?
Yeah.
And she has amazing eyebrows, of course.
Of course.
And I was like, I just want eyebrows like yours.
Yeah.
And I wasn't over-plucking like I was in high school, but I was still kind of over-plucking.
Yeah.
And so she was like, she's like, you have to let those grow in.
Yeah.
And I was like, word? And she's like, yeah. And so, like, I did. I started growing them in, like, 2 years ago. And now I'm pretty happy with my eyebrow game.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah. You know, they're not sisters. They're not twins. They're sisters. Right. It's, like, something you have to get comfortable with.
And I will never have Michelle Obama eyebrows. And, like, that's a truth. Sadly. I had to, like, really, I really had to let that truth come into my life, though. Because I was like, man, I just want to look. People always tell me I look mad all the time, and I don't think it's about my eyebrows. Like,
yeah.
But I want to look like mad, like Michelle Obama looks mad.
Right.
Like, where she's just yes.
She looks stern.
She looks stern, and yeah. I want to look stern all right. the time.
Yeah.
But it's just not going to happen through my eyebrows.
Yeah.
It's not the path.
Oh, yeah. Well, at least we figured it out. Right. I mean, even if we didn't, fuck it. Who right. cares? It's just like the patriarchy right. being like, you have to right. like
worry about this thing.
The right, yeah, the right shape of eyebrows. But like, really, it's like femme happiness.
It really like, is. Like, it's okay. Though. Like, I totally okay actually to like enjoy plucking my eyebrows.
Like, I do too. I like doing my eyebrows more than I like doing my eye makeup.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, it's just so much fun to like put a little. My gosh, it's the best. It's like so therapeutic.
You are new to it then.
Yeah.
No. No, I don't mean that shady. I just mean that like I remember being that yeah. happy about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's like a honeymoon.
I remember
phase.
That joy. Yeah. I still occasionally have that joy, but like right now if I like open my little mirror and like it's a mess, I'm like, oh God, what have I been doing? I've been neglecting my eyebrows.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. One time I also like stabbed myself with those scissors that you can use to like trim your eyebrows uh-huh. because they're so like sharp
yeah.
at the end.
Yeah, they're
and
real.
I stabbed it right into my finger.
Like you
one
can't
day.
Even take them on airplanes.
Yeah, they're like a weapon.
Like you'll kill somebody.
Oh my God, it hurt very bad.
I
and
imagine.
I was afraid of them for a minute. I was yeah. like, I'm not going to trim my eyebrows for like a few weeks.
For a little bit.
And just then it was like a forest on my
yeah.
face.
Yeah, it surprises you.
Yeah,
you're
really
like, how
does.
Did they grow so fast?
Yeah,
like,
it comes out of nowhere.
You'll spend a whole like Sunday morning yeah. like shaping them perfectly. And then
right.
by like Tuesday evening, you're like, what?
Yeah.
Why?
Why are you?
How do you grow this quickly? I don't understand.
No, I don't know. Brian, do you have anything to add from a masculine perspective about eyebrows?
She just, like, my girlfriend, she spends so much time waxing them and doing the art.
She waxes them herself?
Not herself.
Oh, I waxed mine myself.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Occasionally.
Oh, that's too advanced for me at this
juncture.
It took
me some years to get, yeah. like, used to the idea. It's yeah. terrifying.
Yeah.
No, but she'll, like, wax them.
Yeah.
And then she'll say that my eyebrows are like bushy and like all
you can
over
barely
the place.
See your
I was
eyebrows.
Say, you're a redhead.
Well,
yeah.
No, she's like, but she's like that, like particular about eyebrows. It's
okay.
Like she because she
should
her,
judge a reality show about yeah. eyebrows.
Yeah.
Honestly, like because she's so focused on her eyebrows, they're just like her like. She thinks that's like one of her most defining features.
Oh wow!
Okay.
Now
she
I really want to see
of...
your girlfriend's eyebrows.
I'll
like, show
you.
Me a picture
I'll
of your girlfriend's
you.
Eyebrows.
I'll show you a picture in a second.
Yeah. We are going deep.
We're really a good one,
on the eyebrow train right now.
I gotta pick a good picture though, otherwise she's gonna be pissed at me.
Oh my gosh! Of course.
I mean the listeners can't see it.
Yeah. Can't see it. Only us.
If they're still listening.
Yeah, right?
She does have really good eyebrows. Like, that's not
okay.
a joke.
Yeah.
Those are pretty great
no,
eyebrows.
She's got, like, an art. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like she's, like, defined... got textbook arch and everything.
She
like,
does.
She lines it up with the pupil of her eye.
Yeah.
And
right.
I'm just not. Man, I'm a little intimidated by her.
I am, too.
Let's not talk about eyebrows.
I am, too. Let's.
I don't want to talk about eyebrows
let's
anymore.
Let's move on to things that we're good at,
yeah.
Rachel.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's talk about how. Oh my God. All right. I really do want to talk about your poetry.
Words.
I think it's amazing. And I appreciate you. And we don't have to talk just about femme shit all night.
That's
but
fine, though,
that's too. Also good, too.
You know.
Mm-hmm. So did you go to Capitol?
I did.
Right? Okay.
I went to Capitol
so
University.
Did you? Oh, yeah.
Hello.
I went to Otterbein.
Oh, so Crusaders like, in the house.
I
Crusaders
know.
In the house.
More like Crapital.
Right? What? Put your flags in your armor because yeah. we're doing it for Jesus.
Oh, man. Small town Ohio college rivalries.
Just
really
the most
big
ridiculous
deal.
Thing in the world, I think.
So did you get into poetry there? Is that how you started?
Sort of. I majored in theater and performance.
Okay.
And one of my classes was it alternative experimental theater? And in that, I learned what slam poetry was. So there was like some section or mention of it in the class. And I looked more into it and I was like, oh, that's cool. But I definitely wasn't thinking about doing it. I was just like, oh, that's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
I've always sort of secretly written.
Yeah.
But I wasn't like out here like in these streets sharing it. I was just like, oh, that's a thing people do.
Yeah.
I was very organized when I was younger. And so I had like theater was what I focused on for me to practice, to, you know, immerse myself in. And then I always felt it was like a good idea to have another creative thing that I could just sort of watch.
Okay.
So when I graduated, I found out there was Poetry Slam in Columbus. And mm-hmm. so I started watching and hanging out at those shows. I ended up with some really terrible roommates, and so I would hide from them at the Poetry Slam. Oh. I would be like, oh, I'd love to have a house meeting, but I'd for the Poetry Slam.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
Maybe.
Not doing that.
And then come home, like, after they were on.
Right.
And be like, oh, okay. Sorry, I missed you.
Oh, man. They wanted to have house meetings.
Like, ooh. Really intense ones.
Yeah.
So it was part of a church.
Oh,
so was it like a ministry
house? Did it begin
house?
With an X?
Dang.
Yeah.
Did we have that conversation?
Yeah, thank you.
Before?
No, we haven't.
Okay. Yeah. So it was that church.
Yeah. Okay.
Their house meetings were quite intense.
Okay.
Like when I moved into the house, they were like, "There will be house meetings," and I was like, "Word!" Like figure out who's cleaning the bathroom, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I like go to my first couple house meetings, and I'm like, "Oh my god."
What have I done?
I thought I was just getting like cheap German village rent.
Right.
And like living with people I mostly liked.
Right.
But no.
So you didn't know what you were getting into?
Not entirely.
Okay.
Like I had like this sort of pretty idea of it because I'd known the people for a while.
Yeah.
I'd been part of it for a couple years,
mm-hmm.
but not sort of as immersed as I ended up getting.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
Because I had met them all through theater. I was doing theater with a theater company they ran. Which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And they were fun people. And mm-hmm. I also sort of was naive enough to think that like, well, like all artsy people are pretty liberal.
Right. Right.
So I was like, they're totally fine with like,
I believe,
you
that
know,
to
gay
this
people.
Day.
It's a lie.
It's not true.
It's a lie. That is a lie that will hurt you in terrible ways.
Oh no.
And so, yeah, like I discovered things about that whole situation that I was not prepared for.
Oh man.
So I kind of, moved out while they were at church.
Did you really?
I mean, I told them I was moving, but yeah. I didn't tell them when.
Yeah.
A friend of mine's family owns a moving company.
Yeah.
He got me a truck.
Oh, my gosh.
We loaded it up and moved it to my new apartment without telling them where it was.
Did they try to get you to stay? What happened?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a whole thing. It was a whole ordeal.
Yeah.
You know. And then when I didn't, it was a lot of, like, you know, claiming I was siding with the devil and things. And I was like, no, I just
want to live my life, bro.
Right. I'm just trying to do me. I'm yeah. just trying to, you know, not tell my gay friends they can pray that out. Because like,
oh.
I did not have any idea I was involved in that kind of church.
Oh my gosh. Is that real? That really is real.
They think that, yeah, they think that it's a choice. And I wasn't out yet. I wasn't even entirely sure I was queer.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I was a theater nerd. Like,
yeah.
All of my friends not
weren't
in the church were
all.
Gay.
Yeah.
So I was just like, I'm not going to tell my friends to pray that out.
No.
Like, that's terrible.
No.
And so, like, yeah, like, that was sort of the straw that did it for me, where I was just like, that's not a real thing. I have to go.
Was like, that, like, gradual, or did you, like...
It was. It was, like, it was slow. Well, it was gradual in that, like, weird little controlling things kept happening. And then, I don't know, it came to a head in a conversation, and like in that conversation, it was like revealed that like, this was a church that believed you could pray the gay away. And I was like, oh, I cannot be here.
I cannot do this.
This is not anything I can involve myself with.
Yeah.
And then this sort of battle of sorts began.
Yeah. So that says a lot. I mean, even though you weren't like out yet, I think that says a lot about you as a person, just being like, not going to get behind that, even though it doesn't like directly affect me. Like you were like adamantly like rejecting that.
Yeah. Like that was just not the, it was, well, I mean, I was also like, is another thing my mom did was she raised us very like, you know, she took us to pride parades when we were little.
Yeah.
And on up like, yeah. And so, yeah, we'd like just to, I think I sort of had like backwards culture shock. In that, like, when I was growing up, I kept encountering, like, conservative people and being like, what is this?
Who are you?
Who thinks like this?
Yeah.
And really believing that, like, you know, like, liberal-minded folks were the majority. Mm-hmm. And then finding out I was wrong about that.
Right.
And that sort of being like, oh, my God, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Why are people so concerned about who's sleeping with who?
No.
Like, why?
Man.
So yeah, like just it never would have, I never would have considered staying in a church like that.
Right. Because it's not, it doesn't feel like it should be like a church belief.
No.
It feels like it should be like a hate group belief.
Right. And so I was like, oh, this isn't where, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
Like, bye.
Wow.
So yeah, I don't even remember how we got here.
I don't know either. I feel like
we were talking about my terrible roommate. So it was the ministry house, and I was hiding from them.
Yeah.
By going to slam poetry. And then eventually I moved out on my own. I kept going to slam poetry anyway because I'd met a lot of cool people there.
Yeah.
And slowly but surely, I started to read on the open mic occasionally. But I was just like, slam. Oh no, I would never do that. That's terrifying.
Yeah. It is intimidating. I mean, I'm a performer and like, I'm whatever, but I, slam like, is very intimidating.
Like, I mean, I came out of theater. Like you go and do like regional auditions where you have like 6 minutes to wow, like a room full of directors. And like, that's not as scary as slam.
Yeah. Right.
And so, yeah, I was terrified. Even just reading on open mic, I was terrified because, like, my poems had been so private up until then. And then, like, I got dumped. But I was in a so, like, normally when I get dumped, I kind of tend to do something with my appearance. Like, I'll cut my hair drastically or, you know, like people do.
You're right.
You know, but I was in a play, so I couldn't change my appearance at the time.
Oh.
And so, like, the riskiest thing I could think to do was to slam.
Wow.
And it went kind of well.
Wow.
So I kept trying.
Yeah. Do you remember what your first poem that you performed was about?
It was about leaving the church.
Oh, was it really?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Was it dark?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez.
It sort of had like a, you know, Gulliver's Travels kind of theme about being tied down
by
like tiny people.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome. Yeah, that's fucking awesome.
It wasn't as good as that. Like, it was terribly written. It was not a good poem. It was terribly written. But that, the boiling down of said poem.
Yeah.
Sounds better than the actual poem.
Yeah.
It was not very well written.
Oh, man. Well, that brief description that you gave was great. So I think you should rewrite it.
Maybe
and
I will.
Re-perform.
I have a friend that says we essentially only write the same three poems over and over and over again.
Okay.
So maybe that's one.
Yeah. I feel that way about my jokes. They're all just about gay shit. Everyone I write, I'm like, how else can I tell this audience that I'm queer?
Right.
Oh geez. Okay, so you hadn't come out by this point.
No,
you were still like not quite,
I was still
sure.
Not quite sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I was sort of like, I think my sexual preference was just like longing. Like that's how I existed. I would just get these like intense crushes on people.
Yeah.
And just sort of from afar long for them. Like that was how I went through most of my 20s.
Did you notice a theme? Was it just like everyone? And then you were like, oh, I guess I have longing crushes on everyone, so I must be queer.
No, I still didn't come together that easily. Because I don't know, like, some of it was indoctrination from the church. Some of it was just, like, I'd never really thought about, like, that. To me, you were either, like, you were either a lesbian or you weren't.
Right.
I didn't know. Like, I knew there were bisexuals, but, like, people are rude about bisexuals.
Yes, very rude.
People were always saying things like, bi now, gay later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, well, I'm definitely not, you know, just into girls, so I guess I'm straight.
Right.
I guess I'll just secretly like women. Like, who doesn't like boobs? Everybody likes boobs.
I'm right.
Like, that's normal.
That's a real thought.
Like, that was actually a thought that I had. And I was like, well, who doesn't like boobs?
Yeah.
Like, that's just,
that's normal.
Who doesn't?
Right.
What's not to like? So yeah, I probably didn't come out until, or even like come to terms with the fact that I was queer until I was probably 28 or so.
Okay.
And I was in a relationship with a bi man.
Oh.
And so we talked a lot about attraction and sexuality.
Yeah.
It was also my first foray into, like, non-monogamous relationships.
Yeah.
And in part because, so we could each sort of
figure it out
and also, like, just sort of explore that side of ourselves outside of a heteronormative relationship.
Yeah.
And so that relationship was really great for that.
Yeah. That's great. So you were in a relationship with a guy who was like bi and you were like coming out as bi.
Right.
Funny story. I was in a relationship with a bi man as well. And I was bi, but neither of us knew it. It was like in college and like we had this great, I mean, we had a great relationship and he's like such a sweetheart and we're friends now.
Mm-hmm.
But like, we were both like so uncomfortable with ourselves, I think, that like it never could have lasted. And now we're like both out and we're like, I'm bi. This is cool. Like,
right.
I wish we would have known so that we could have like helped each other.
Right.
But that's great.
I mean, yeah, I think my partner at the time did. Yeah. He definitely helped me through that.
Like, yeah.
And it helped that we had the same taste in women. We definitely didn't have the same taste in men.
Yeah.
But we had the same taste in women. And so like he would be like, you know, scrolling through Tumblr or something. And we'd be looking at women and I'd be like, yeah, she's hot. And he'd be like, you think a lot of these girls are hot? And I'm like, yeah, so? He's like, are you into women? And I was like, maybe. Wait, ask me that again. I had asked somebody like earlier in my 20s if they thought I might be gay, like an older lesbian. And she was like, no, you're too boy crazy.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, okay. So I just sort of shut it down for several years after that. I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm too boy crazy to be interested in women.
Oh, man.
But, you know. She didn't know.
Yeah, she didn't. She didn't fucking know you is the problem.
Well, she's one of my good friends, but she just, I was boy crazy. Yeah. And so based on what she observed, like, I sort of see how she got there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I wasn't demonstrating a whole lot of, like, she's hot.
Yeah. Kind of. Right.
I think she might have figured it out when we were watching, like, Law and Order, and we were both, like, drooling over Mariska Hargitay.
Okay.
I was like, she's hot.
She is so hot.
I think Mariska Hargitay is a lot of, she like, is... girl's first crush.
Yeah, so I agree. Like,
man.
I think you don't even realize it.
You don't.
And then you're just like, she's so powerful.
Right, it's the power.
Oh my God. Yes,
the power. You're like, oh my God.
Yes,
Mariska Hargitay. I don't know.
M A R I S K A, Hargitay. Yeah, she's Hungarian.
Is she?
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
She's also, I think, she's the daughter of what, Mae West, or
her mom was a famous bombshell. Actress. Yeah. Oh, I don't remember what her name was, but yeah, her mom was a famous actress. No, I think it is. I think it is the power, but it's like she was
Jane Mansfield.
Oh, that's who it is.
Yeah,
yeah, you do, from SVU.
Yeah.
No, I caught myself like once checking her out, like while I was watching SVU with my grandpa. My grandpa was like, "She's beautiful," and I was like, "Yeah,
yeah." Like a fine wine too, better with age.
Right.
She is, gets hotter every season.
Like, move over, Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston has never done anything.
Exactly.
No. Yeah, she doesn't have the power.
She's more of a Rush silent.
Beautiful and kicks like and, creeps ass.
Oh yeah, like, yeah, she it's the best so much ever. I should write a like love ode to Marishka.
Yes.
I would love if that's what this inspires for
it
you.
It might. I also have to write like a, I don't know, I want to write like a personal ad for to get Roxanne Gay to date me.
Oh.
I'm like, can that video go viral?
Yeah, right?
Roxanne Gay and I go and eat pasta or something. Like, that would make me real happy.
Oh my gosh. So are you more like, are you more attracted to like a Shane or more of a Carmen or more of what? Where are you on
a
the attraction?
Shane or a Carmen?
Oh my God, do you watch The L Word?
No, I'm bad queer.
Oh my gosh.
I don't have cable or anything. I haven't had cable since college.
Like Butch or Femme are you attracted
I'm
to? Or somewhere in the middle?
I'm typically attracted to Butches.
Yeah.
Though there's an occasional Femme that you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like I won't say her name because that's creepy, but there's a burlesque dancer in Columbus that I'm just like, oh my God. I get all red.
You're like blushing.
I do.
Right now.
I blush. Like, she's gorgeous. And like, I can't even handle it.
I love that.
So there's the occasional, like, yeah, there's the occasional femme.
Okay. We haven't even fucking talked about poetry
I
yet.
Know, right?
So let's
this
do.
This is all poetry. What
okay,
are you
let's do. Sorry, I just clapped into the mic. Okay, let's do like a flash session because I'm sure you've talked a lot about poetry.
I do it in your, some interviews.
Yeah, in your like world and in your life, but I definitely want to talk a little bit. So you got like you had like a viral video,
right?
And which poem was that?
It's called 10 Honest Thoughts on Being Loved by a Skinny Boy.
Okay. Okay.
Which is about the boy who I was in the bisexual open relationship
yes.
with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to say about that.
No, that's okay. I feel
it's really old now.
I remember you talked about it at that show that we were on together and you were like, oh, I just like don't even like talking about it because I've had to do it so
I've
much.
I've had to. Yeah. Now I only do it at like big paying college shows.
Yes. But that's the other
that's
thing.
That's often what they're paying for.
Right. But that's the other thing that you said is that this is like a real like moneymaker for you.
It
now. Was.
Yeah. It does generate some income.
Yeah.
And the video going viral sort of like opened a ton of doors.
Yeah.
Like I get invited to colleges and festivals and all sorts of cool places to just read poems.
That's amazing.
Right?
So do they like pay you? They pay for your like everything?
Yeah, usually.
You just or like go there and you're like, I'm the talent.
Yeah. I did this festival a couple years ago called the Dodge Festival. And like, I don't think I've ever been treated so swanky in my whole life. Like, I had a handler.
No kidding.
Because I couldn't get from one event to the other without getting like mobbed.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I was like, this is amazing. And they also like would pre-open my water. Like my water bottles. They're like,
no.
Your water bottles are on the stage. The lids have been pre-cracked. And I was like, what is this life?
Yeah.
And I have like my friend Ben with me just because it was in New Jersey and he lives in New Jersey. So he was like running around with me. And somebody said that while he was standing next to me. He's like, oh, can they find an intern to spit it into your mouth like a baby bird?
Yeah.
I was like, don't hate on my diva moment, okay?
This is my moment.
Like, I either need this all the time or never again.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do this in between. I need this star life right now.
How does it make you feel that, like, those poems that are, like, so personal to you are, like, out for everyone to see? I mean, I feel like that's like a huge,
it's part of it for me. Yeah, like a poem doesn't feel done until I can perform it in front of people.
Okay.
Because I was a performer first.
Yeah.
And performance has always been about connection to me.
Yeah.
And so the fact that people are connecting both with my performance and with my words.
Yeah.
That's huge to me.
Yeah.
Like that's everything.
Yeah.
So like I like it. If it was something I wanted to keep to myself, I wouldn't put it in a poem.
Okay.
or I'd keep it in like a secret poem.
Yeah. Do you have any secret poems?
Very few.
Okay.
Because I like the idea that like I can say something that will make somebody feel less alone.
Yes.
So like the 10 Honest Thoughts poem, I still get so much email just based on that poem and girls being like, this is my life.
Right. Right.
Or people in general being like, this is me and my partner.
Yeah.
And like, I love that. I love that. Like, cause I did feel sort of alone when I wrote that poem. Yeah. I had never dated a thin man before him. It brought a lot of things to me. Like, it was just like, I didn't know I felt this way about my body. I didn't know. It was causing some friction between us. And I wrote the poem on like a bus to Chicago after we'd had this big fight. And then I left to go do some shows in Chicago.
Yeah.
And it was early in my slam career. So I'd gotten offered a couple features and I was out to Chicago to do them. And I wrote the poem on the bus. To help me work things out, which is what I do. It's just sort of how I became a writer. It's
this
is how I work things out so I don't panic.
Yeah.
I make lists.
Yeah.
Or I make things into metaphors to make them grounded for me.
Yeah. Oh, man. What's your writing process like?
A mess.
Yeah.
So right now, the way it tends to happen is that I scribble lines and ideas down on like post-it notes while I'm at work and then like shove them into my journal like I'm a spy or something. Like,
yeah.
Nothing to see here.
Yeah.
There's no creativity happening in those cubicles. Oh. And then eventually, like not nearly as often as I should, I'll sit down and open the journal and go through the post-it notes and see what's a viable idea or what might still need to simmer. See what I can write off of.
Yeah.
Usually nowadays I need like a deadline or some structure to really get myself to sit down and write.
Yeah.
Some of that's depression and anxiety. I think when you hit a certain place, with like poetry or any art, there's this weird pressure to not suck.
Right. and to produce a lot. Yeah.
Which, you know, prior to, you know, going viral and whatnot, I didn't produce a ton, but I produced more than I do now.
Yeah.
And I also have like a lot of brilliant ass friends who are like doing amazing things.
Yeah.
And like there's joy for them, but there's also like a little like nudge at myself every time.
Yeah.
Like, but what are you doing?
Right.
What are you doing with your time?
Yeah.
But
that's anxiety. And then the depression hits and you're like,
exactly. And then you can't do anything.
You're frozen.
So, this last year has been a lot of like sorting out antidepressants so that I can sort of get myself to a good writing spot. So I'm writing maybe a poem every couple months.
Yeah.
But that's a really low output for me.
Okay. I've heard other people say, and I feel this way sort of about my writing sometimes, and sometimes I feel like it comes more like in stages like that. Mm-hmm. But I've heard people say like, you know, I don't write songs. I'm the first one to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, I don't write poems. I'm the first one to hear them. Do you ever feel like that happens to you where it just like flows out of you like that?
It hasn't in a really long time. Like it's happened occasionally. But like 10 Honest Thoughts was even like a post-it note poem, where I had these ideas that weren't connected at all.
Yeah.
And then I just connected them with numbers.
Yeah.
But no, it's really rare. Like I've written a couple poems to my best friend when she was like going through it. And those tend to come out very like, boom, there it is.
Yeah.
Otherwise, no, it's a lot of like letting things simmer, writing fragments, letting it sit.
Yeah.
Until I figure out the next fragment.
Yeah. Do you feel like you think that things are going to be part of different poems and then they end up being a part of one? Or
yeah,
like
that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of a beautiful thing.
It is.
I'm like,
right?
These are totally two different thoughts, but
right,
then they end up somehow coming together.
Right. Some weird way.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. That's happened a few times.
That's great. So you also host a couple of shows.
I do.
In town. And did you feel like you wanted to start hosting? I mean, did you feel like there was something that was missing in the scene that you wanted to create? Or did this opportunity just kind of come to you? Like, how did those things happen?
So with Writing Wrongs was established before I came along.
Mm-hmm.
Will Evans started Writing Wrongs so that there would be more than one poetry slam in town.
Okay.
Because there are plenty of open mics, but prior to that, there was only, like, really one slam. So Will started Righting Wrongs, and it was like this really great atmosphere that I really liked. So I sort of got on board with him after I got on a slam team, which is a whole long process, where you slam and slam and slam, and then there's a grand slam, and then if you place correctly, you end up on the team. So I ended up on a team with Will, and we just had really good chemistry. And we sort of see things the same way, which is, it's odd because we couldn't be more different human beings.
Yeah.
But like we have a similar like sensibility about things. And so he sort of slowly brought me into the fold, and eventually sort of talked me into hosting. So I started doing that. He has since retired, like he retired last year.
Mm-hmm.
He left me in charge of like doing the booking and that sort of thing for Righting Wrongs. And we have a staff that does a lot of the other stuff.
Oh, okay.
So that's a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
And then my friend Face and I were, like, we got on a team together.
Mm-hmm.
So you spend a lot of time with each other when you're on a team. Because yeah. You're running poems, getting ready for a big competition that happens every summer. And so we were spending a lot of time together, and we were talking about, you know, queerness.
Yeah.
Because they are queer. And we were, like, having trouble finding queers in clubs.
Yeah.
Like, and not just queers, but, like, you know, fat queers.
Yeah.
Like, or, like, you know, queer women who didn't expect us to only want to sleep with women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I think is a big thing here.
Right, right.
And so we sort of toyed with the idea of starting the Columbus Queer Open Mic. And initially, there was like a lot of brainstorming about what kind of space we wanted to create.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually did start out talking with the creators of the other open mic. Like, I think we were all sort of on the same page, and then we kind of weren't.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bad blood or anything like that. It was just sort of like, we want to do this very specific thing.
Right, right.
And they wanted to do, you know, they wanted to do a different, very specific thing.
Yeah.
And then Face finished their master's program, which they were in. So they had all this free time.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's start this show we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Like, let's try to meet other queers.
Yeah.
Like, let's make this space that we want to make.
Yeah.
And so we started that. And it's gone really well.
Yeah.
I think we've done, what, 4 now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm pretty happy with it, for the most part, anyway. We try to primarily feature women or non-binary people of color,
mm-hmm.
Which has also been oddly hard to find in Columbus. Like, I know our people are out there.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm biracial, Face is Native, and so, like, we really wanted to, like, cultivate a space for people of color.
Yeah.
It's still not quite where we'd like it in that regard, but like I'm really happy to see the people that we see.
Right.
We get like a handful of regulars.
Yeah.
And then it's been a different crowd every time.
Yeah.
Like aside from this handful, like yeah. A whole new room full of people.
Right.
So I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been interesting. It's been really interesting.
That's great.
I look forward to like continuing to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely feel like there's like a lot of divisions like in the queer like culture mm-hmm. scene here especially.
Definitely.
And, you know, like I would love to see it become more of a, you know, unified group.
Yeah.
But it's hard because I don't think that everyone has that idea of like, we need to like invite everyone to the table.
Right.
You know, and like that becomes hard and problematic when you like find yourself in these spaces where it's like, are you even trying?
Right.
You know, like I feel like it's just like, we can't get anywhere if we're not like actively like trying.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I agree with that entirely.
What do you think we could do better, like, as just people in the scene?
Oh, man. I don't know. Or else things would be running a little differently at my show. I don't know. That's sort of what we're trying to figure out now. Yeah. I mean, part of it was, like, Like, the Columbus Queer Open Mic is a pay what you can show. There's not, like, a set cover because we wanted to sort of keep, you know, financial barriers down.
Right, absolutely.
We reconfigure the room so that no one has to use the platform stage in the space we use.
Right.
So that it's open to all body types. So, like, we just try to create a space and hope people will come.
Yeah.
But I think we're learning right now that there's something else we need to be doing.
Yeah.
Part of that, I think, also is about is, you know, that we primarily feature women and non-binary people of color.
Right.
To do like the main spot in the show.
Yeah.
And we're sort of unwilling to budge on that in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But I think there's also something aside from that, some outreach or something that we can be doing. So we're trying to figure that out.
Yeah. Well, like, count me in, you know, like, seriously. Oh, man. I feel like we have, like, really gone through a lot. I feel like this was not the typical interview that you would hear.
It was
hopefully
pretty scattered.
I'm crossing my fingers, though, because I think it's a great thing.
Yeah.
To tell the untold story.
About my eyebrows.
About femme shit. Yeah.
Running from a church.
Yeah. Just casually escaping a cult.
You
no
know,
big deal.
Whatever. Just left while they were all praying one night. I'm just going to go get some milk.
Never come back.
Bye. The funnier part about that is that the sofas in the living room were mine.
No.
So they came home from church and had no sofa.
Oh. Sucks to suck. Sorry.
There was like a chair. Yeah. I was like, well, you guys can share that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go.
You can all sit on one chair and hate people who are like me.
Right.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, man. What a good point to leave off on. Thank you, Rachel. Sure. You are a delight. You are a beautiful mermaid.
Yay.
Angel on earth.
That's a lot of things to be. I'll take all of them.
Okay, great.
In my pockets.
All right. Signing off, Babylonians. Have a good night.
Good night. Kisses.